Are we there? Okay. I'd like to make a couple announcements. Lots of old-time musicians here tonight. I want you all to remember that we're instituting a new Fall Old-Time Week this coming October, and the dates are October. Okay. There it is. I'd just like to make a couple announcements before we get started here. You've already heard that, right? Okay. I wanted to make sure everybody knew about Fall Time Week. That'll be this coming October. The dates are the 22nd to the 28th. And that's something new for Augusta. We have Spring Dulcimer Week. We've had going for a couple years, but we're going to institute this Fall Old Time Week. I think it's going to be a good time. We're going to have some fine old timers here and some hot string band music with the Wildcats and other folks. Also like to remind you that there will be a sing immediately following the concert right out on the plaza in the chapel, and that will be led by Jenny Hawker, and that will be immediately following the concert and probably last for an hour or so. And we're about, for all the dancers in the crowd, and I know there's lots of them, we're about to institute a real change here at Augusta. We're going to graduate. We're going to go from, as somebody said, downstairs in purgatory, the pit, all the way out and up the hill a little bit to our brand new dance pavilion, and that's going to take place immediately right after this concert. We're going to have a square dance, and everybody's welcome. And I think it's going to be a good time to christen the new dance floor. Our first guest here to get the second half rolling is a good friend and a really fine musician. And the good news is that Craig Johnson is moving from Maryland to West Virginia. So Maryland's loss is going to be our gain, and it's going to take place in about 3 weeks. So would you make welcome Craig Johnson. Thank you.
In the middle of the ocean there grows a green tree, but I'll never go back on the girl that loves me. Old paint, I'm a leaving Cheyenne. Farewell, old paint, I'm a leaving Cheyenne. Old paint's a good pony and he paces when he can. Old paint's hired a colt down on the Rio Grande, and the colt wouldn't pace, and they called it Cheyenne. Old paint, I'm a leaving Cheyenne. Farewell, old paint, I'm a leaving Cheyenne. Old paint's a good pony, and he paces when he can.
This is Alice Gerard, who just walked out here. Hello. I used to run down to Galax, Virginia every chance I got, and that's where Alice was living. And she took me over to meet a fellow named Cale Brewer. We used to hang out over there quite a bit and play this song, which was one of his favorites. Maybe I better get rid of this, which is going to make it awful for whoever comes up here next, no doubt.
soul let us part. When I grow too old to dream, your kiss will live in my heart.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm getting a lot of pleasure out of my new Wayne Henderson guitar. Doesn't that sound pretty? One of my favorite things to do along with playing the fiddle is singing, and we've had an orgy of it here this week. I got to get together with an old friend of mine, Kate Brislin, and we sang, and this... What we're about to do next is getting to be sort of an annual tradition here at Augusta. Two people that I love to sing with are Jenny Hawker and Kay Justice, and I'd like to ask them to come out now. Hey, girls, come on. We're part of the Late Night Bathroom Singing Club. Like to do an old hymn for you now. It tells the story of the lone pilgrim.
I came to the place where the lone pilgrim lay, and pensively stood by him. Oh.
There's nothing like that sound when those voices get going, just meshing like that. I'd like to ask a couple of other friends to please come out here. Mike Seeger and Ron Mullinex, two fine banjo players. I've been teaching intermediate fiddle all week. Let's see, am I doing this right, Flan? Here, I got it now. Well, you should come to my class, Mike. You might. And we've been sawing away a little bit on this tune. The class has, and we have too. We decided to try it tonight with two banjos. And one is, let's see, what are you doing? You're chording, and you're playing the lead, right? This is a beautiful old tune. There was a 92-year-old fiddler that lived down the road from me in Galax by the name of Luther Davis, who was a storehouse of wonderful times, a lot of good food, and evenings spent learning some of his beautiful tunes. And this is one of his. This version of the tune, I don't know anybody else who played it like this. A lot of people played the tune, but a little bit of a different version called Train on the Island.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to play a banjo song here with my old gourd banjo, my new gourd banjo. My 100% natural gourd banjo. From Hollins, Virginia, a song called Roustabout. From Rockbridge County, Virginia, a couple of counties upstream, me. About when you're going to the shore, I've got a good gal on the other side. Baby, don't you want to go? If I'd listened to what my mama said, I wouldn't have been here today. But me being young and foolish too, women led me astray. Who's gonna shoe your pretty little feet? And who's gonna glove your hand? And who's gonna do your rockabye when your man's in the distant land? If I had no pair of wings like old Nora's dove, I'd sail from pine to pine, mourn for my own true love. Oh, my own true love. My wife left home last night, I'll tell you who I found her. Lying down in the pines, a gang of boys around her. Some was hugging, and some was kissing, and some was kneeling down. There's one old rascal hanging round, trying to tear my poor kingdom down. Oh, my Donny gal.
Thank you.
Learned that from blind Josh Thomas, a black man who lived around Hollins, Virginia, from around 1890 until around 1970 or so. If anybody knows anything about him, ever met him back then, I'd love to talk with you some about him. He was a great man. This banjo here was made for me by Clark Prudy, who's over here somewhere. It's a kind of a copy of a banjo made about 140 years ago. I'd like to play you a song most of you all know.
No, I'll just stand up.
You want to stand up?
No, I don't want to stand up. I want to sit down. I ain't never stood up in my life. You know, now growing up over in Sodom, my daddy was county commissioner for 20 years. And the last legal thing that he did before he went out of office was to change the name of Sodom to Revere. And he said the reason he did that was so that I wouldn't have to go off to these places and play music and have to say that I was from Sodom. And I told him that was all right when I was elected county commissioner, that my first legal act would be, do I need to do something?
If you want to sit down, I'd be happy to move the microphone.
Or well, can you move it as I'm sitting down, or do I need to hush while you're doing it?
Well, let's see. What would you like?
We're in a dilemma here, folks.
It's right there.
I'm so easy to work with. I'm a sound engineer's nightmare, I swear. But anyway, I told him, he could change it to Revere, and he could be from Revere, and as soon as I could get it arranged, I was going to change it back to Sodom so I could be from Sodom.
You got that tuned up for 35?
I don't know. It'll be close.
Well, that close is close enough.
Close enough for what you need, anyhow. You know, close don't count except in horseshoes and grenades.
You have to come up with a new tag every time.
I know, I'm that way. Got more nerve and I've got sense. Go ahead, play.
Sheila, there's a lot of scary tales come out of the sticks, too, wasn't there?
I don't know none.
You never heard none?
Not
well, if you go to pecking one, I'll tell one then.
Hello.
We want these people to have nightmares tonight, don't we?
Don't do them that way, Bobby. Lord, have mercy.
Well, I'll tone it.
Do it anyway, Bobby. Let's get a bunch.
I'll
of
tone it down to R rating or something, man. How's that? There's a girl lived back up in the mountains, not far from our part of the country. And she's real pretty, and her name was Polly, so they called her Pretty Polly. And a lot of fellers around there like to court Polly, but she wasn't biggity or nothing, but she is choosy, she's particular. There's a guy that come into that neck of the woods that they called him Mr. Fox. Nobody knowed much about him, but they didn't even know really what his business was, but people didn't always ask questions too much. He's a nice looking feller. And the gal sure never asked no questions. He's always seen with one on his arm about all the time. Well, he tried to court Pretty Polly a whole lot, but there's just something about him that she distrusted. And she'd talk to him, but she never would go out with him. Well, one day, Mr. Fox come down there to Pretty Polly's house, and it was the right day. And I mean, every word that come off his tongue rolled off like honey, I mean. And she just eat it every bit up. Well, he begged her to go spend the night with him somewhere. And she said, well, she didn't know, but he just had the right things to say. But he told her that he had a meeting and he was going to be late. And he wanted her to come and meet him out on the mountainside at this place where they grew a ivory tree. Don't ask me what it is, I don't know. But that's what they said, it was ivory tree, and she used to meet him there. Well, after she got gone all the rest of that evening, she got to studying about it and thinking, well, she still distrusted him a little bit, and she decided that she'd go out a little early. Well, she sold out of the house a couple of hours early and got over there to that place she was to meet him, and she clomb up in the tree, got way up in that ivory tree, and sat on a limb. And she sat there a little while, and it wasn't hardly time for her to meet Mr. Fox, but the moon was a-shining, and she heard something coming up the trail down on the mountainside. She looked down there, and pretty shortly up the trail come a horse and a man riding on it, and it was Mr. Fox. Well, he jumped down off the horse and tied the bridle rein to a laurel bush, and he went around to his saddlebag and reached in there and come out with a spade. And he went out from there a little ways and started digging. He dug and dug a little bit, and the hole got bigger and bigger. Pretty soon it got to be a great big hole. And Polly is sitting up there, gotten studying about what and all goes in the hole sometimes. Well, she had an idea she might know what it was that night, and she held on to the limb. He got done, and he sat down right at the base of that tree, right at the foot of it. And he's sitting there, and she's up there holding on. The wind is blowing, and the limb is shaking. And she waited, and finally off down the mountain, the rooster crowed. And it did. Fox got up, and he went over and put the spade back in his saddlebag and took off on the horse. Back down the trail he went. He hadn't gone far till Pretty Polly. She got back down out of the tree, and she burnt the wind to getting home. Well, she got to studying about turning old Mr. Fox in, but she got to thinking, what would she tell the law? She went to meet Mr. Fox to stay all night with him somewhere and saw him digging a hole in the ground. So she thought she'd bide her time. Well, about a week or two later, Mr. Fox come by to see her again. He said, "Polly, why didn't you meet me that night out yonder by the ivy tree?" She said, "Well, I tell you what, I taken sick that day, and I just didn't have no way to let you know. Said that you won't tell nobody where you live at, and I just couldn't tell you." He said, "Well, that's not your fault." Said, "That's all right. We'll make another arrangement before long." She said, "All right." She said, "Won't you sit down and eat dinner while you're here?" Well, he sat down at the table, and she had the food on there on the board. And she went out to the kitchen. She'd saved her some cornbread and took it outside to where his horse was at. And she crumbled it up and put it down in his saddlebag, and then took a knife and cut a split underneath the bag so it, when the horse went to walking, he'd lay her a trail. When Mr. Fox left, sure enough, every little bit, there'd be some crumbs along. She waited a while to give him time to get gone. Long way up the trail, and she started out. She'd go along and take up them crumbs. And she followed them. She come to a place she wasn't quite familiar with, but it was way back in the woods somewhere, and there was a clearing back there, and she seen Mr. Fox's house. It sat there, and there's a yard around it, and a paling fence went around it, and a gate down here in the front. She seed he's gone, so she thought she'd go on and investigate his place. Well, she got down there to the fence, and on the fence there was a note hanging. And on the note it said, "Be bold." Well, she figured she's bold already, so she went through the gate and got over to the porch steps, and there's another sign. She got to reading it, and it said, "Be bold, be bold." Well, it didn't make much more sense than it did to start with, but she'd gone that far, and she went on up to the door, and there's another note on it. She beginning to figure they could have wrote it all out at one time and saved a lot of paper. On that sign it said, "Be bold, be bold, but not too bold." Well, she reached over at the doorknob and turned it around, went to open it up a little bit, looked inside, and there wasn't nothing there. But there's a staircase at the back of the room, and she went back there and started tippy-toeing up the staircase, and got up there at the head of a hall, and she seen a big old oak door down to the other end of it. And she slammed her dime down there to it and seen a note on the door. And it was the last, and it said, be bold, but not too bold, lest your heart's blood run cold." Well, it was getting kind of chilly right then, but she reached over there and started turning that doorknob and opened it up a little bit and looked inside, and the room was full of smoke. She got in there and kept bumping into stuff and made her way to the window and raised it up, and the minute it sucked the smoke out, she got to looking. There's a fireplace up there with a damper set and hickory chips in there and smoke all through that room, and she looked around to see what that was she was running into. And there's hooks hanging from the rafters, and from them hooks there's women's arms and legs and body portions, you know. And she's backing up into and hit against the table and knocked a jar over, and water come pouring out of the jar, and she looked around and a head bobbed out of the jar. Well, she decided it was time to go home. And she went out, and she's going down the steps, and about time she got to the foot of the staircase, she heard the horse coming up the lane. Well, she got around underneath the stairs, and on one of the planks there's a knot hole, and she looked in it, and a minute later she heard somebody crying, and the door flew open, in come Mr. Fox, and he's dragging this girl. It was, I think, one of her cousins, they said. She's just screaming, begging him to aspire life, and he's just laughing at her. He got her over at the stairs and went to pull her up, and she grabbed hold of the banister. He's a-pulling and a-pulling. She wouldn't let go, and finally come out with a big old knife and right down again her wrist, and it cut her hand plumb off and fell right down there in Polly's face right near it. And I guess that's what saved her. She got sick and just about passed out, and so she didn't scream. But just in a minute or so, Fox had the girl up there in that back room, and the screams quit. And I mean, when it did, she sold out for home and wasn't a tarrying neither. Well, there was a frolic to be had that night, and this boy that lived around there close had asked Polly to go with him, and so she did. And got down there to the Frolic, it was something like a, what you'd call a barn dance, I guess now maybe. They'd run these sets, you know, and then after a while some of them would sing love songs or tell stories. And she got down there and looked, and there's old Mr. Fox with another gal on his arm. It seemed like he couldn't be without one 24 hours. And of course she knowed what he's up to, but they had the dance, and after a little while they stopped and said, "Polly," said, "won't you tell us a riddle?" Said, "you're awful good at that." She said, "well, I might could tell you one." She said, "riddle to my riddle to my right, where was I at this time last Saturday night? Way high up in an ivory tree, looking for one, but along come three." Well, they said, "Polly, what does that mean?" She said, "well," said, "I had a dream to explain it," said, "I dreamt that I was to meet Mr. Fox out by the ivory tree, and he is supposed to come walking, but he come on his horse and he had a little spade." Well, Mr. Fox, he jumped out and looked at him and said, "well, that ain't so." They said, "well, is there any more to it than that?" And there's folks around there looking at him sort of strange. And, "yeah," she said, "there's more to it." Said, "I was high and he was low. The wind didn't blow and the cock did crow. Tree did shake and my heart did ache to see what a great big hole that cunning fox did make." "Well, what in the world does that mean, Polly?" She said, "he dug my grave and he's going to kill me and bury me in it." Well, he's just sweating by this time. Said, "well, that wasn't so. It ain't so neither." Well, they said, "is there any more?" And there's edging over closer to him now. She said, "yeah, I dreamt I went to his house and here was these notes telling me to be bold, and I went upstairs and there was all these women. It's been a missing around here lately. Said that he'd been a butchering them, and I was coming out and here he come in with another girl and drug her up there and killed her too." And old Fox is just a screaming. Said, "why, it wasn't so and it ain't so." He said, "it never will be neither." And she said, "well, it was so and it is so, and look, here's the hand that proves it so." She had that a hand in her apron pocket and slung it out in his face. Well, I guess that hacked him a little bit. He's a slippery old fella, and he started out to wind her, and some of them just fell on him, and they got him, they caught him, and took him outside, and they tied him up behind a horse, and they give him a ride around through settlement for a while, and then when they got done with that, they cut his head off and hung it on a pole, and they burned his body in a big old brush pile, and let the wind scatter his ashes. Well, when Polly took everybody around there, the men folks over there to where he lived, they gathered up the remains of them women to take for burial, and they had they found lots of money that he'd stole in the process, and they give it to Polly. Well, some of them said that he was a butcher and that he was taking that meat off somewhere and selling it, and others had an idea that it was more to it than that Fox meant more than just a name, that he was a fox and that he was a feeding his family with that flesh that he had. But anyway, Polly took that money, and I reckon she married that feller. He's awful crazy about her. Last time that I was down there at her house, there's about 14 young'uns running around the yard.
"Polly, pretty Polly, come go away with me. Polly, pretty Polly, come go away with me. Before we get married, some pleasure we'll see."
And that's it.
Thank you.
For a return visit from the famous banjo picker Ron Mullinax.